Gemma. So we are on 9th chapter of the second series of Essays on the Gita, and this chapter is the theory of the Vibhuti. Now, just to reiterate that, well, we have the Gita as it is, and these, of course, we can read it in Sanskrit, have the translation, and we have the commentaries. But there is something else which we find in Essays on the Gita. And the reason is very simple, very logical if you look at it. Any word spoken, phrase spoken, or a passage written or spoken by anyone carries within it not just a body of words, but an intent. The intent may be fully revealed, the intent may be carefully hidden, the intent may be partly revealed. The words are spoken under a stress of inspiration, and that's what we see in the Gita. It's a very short time, possibly 2 hours, when Sri Krishna pours all the knowledge of the world to Arjun. But there are many places where he gives beautiful hints. And a traditional interpretation, or certainly not just reading the Sanskrit and the meaning, tends to hide those or miss out those deeper aspects or intent. And one of them which we see here is in this Vibhuti Yoga. So Vibhuti is a word which nowadays, like the word avatar, even computer, they use the word avatar. I don't know why Vibhuti has not yet come. So Vibhuti is a word which is used often to imply greatness, any great person. But there is a problem there. Because what determines the greatness of the great? Everybody believes he's a great person. Somebody sitting, you know, in any big office believes he's great. Somebody who has written books believes he's great. So, but there is something called as a genuine greatness. That's what is called as a Vibhuti. And it is implied that this greatness of the great is not the greatness of the person. It is the greatness of the divine energy in him. And yes, the person, no doubt, is a symbol for whatever reason. From the evolutionary point of view, he has been prepared to receive the burden of this greatness, because it's a big burden to carry. And there are moments in which it expresses itself. So he is the person who becomes the conduit of the divine afflatus, divine energy, because he has been picked up and chosen. Modern mind has done away with greatness. It's worry of greatness. And Shubhendu says it's a great loss, because there is nothing to look up to. Now, Vibhuti is not to be classified as so and so is Vibhuti, so we must, you know, always, and others are commoner. It's never means like that. Vibhuti marks the path that ultimately the race will follow. He is not an isolated instance. That's why Sri Krishna says, in fact, Vibhutis are, even in any, as we see the snake, the serpent, the beast, whoever rises to a high scale, and humanity is not forever meant to linger in an era where some are great and others are, no, everybody has to rise. So Vibhuti is an indication of where we can go, how we can go. It gives also the path. So in that, we have the importance of this chapter, God in the power of becoming. So the straight away first take home point from this is that God is not just a being, a silent witness. Suryo yatha sarva lokasya chakshu nalipyate chakshushe bahya dosha. That we have heard. He is the witness. But he is also the shakti which is operating in creation. God in the power of becoming. One of the famous phrases of Sri Aurobindo is being is becoming. So he flows into creation. It means that creation is neither an accident, however inexplicable it may seem to us, and creation is not some illusion, some magical trick done by somebody, worst of all God, because, you know, to do tricks and then trap us there. But there is a meaning in the process of nature. This is the first thing. Second, as we have already seen in the Gita, the first business of man is to free himself from the clutch of ignorance. But then free himself into what? Into realizing the Godhead. That's what Shurbindo in the Gita reveals, like Sri Krishna reveals. And this Godhead is threefold. He is, of course, within us. He is also in the cosmos. That's what the becoming reveals to us. And he transcends the cosmos. But he has to be realized not only within the individual, but in everyone, in every aspect of creation. This is something very beautiful. That's where the sense of the sacred, the sense of the divinity in all things comes. Because in every element, there is the divine presence. As the mother puts it, last time we were saying, a thought of God. We may also say there is a feeling of God. Looking at certain things, you feel a sweetness of God, a charm of God, the beauty of God, the radiance of God, so the opulence of God, the magnificence of God, even the humility of God. See, grass is known as humility, mother named it. So everywhere, and you can't imagine a garden without grass. That's the beauty. So everywhere there is a thought of God manifesting itself through creation. But is this enough? Now here comes the parting shot that no. Even our nature, the threefold prakriti, sattva, rajas, tamogun, there is something beyond it, and that Sri Krishna hints when he says para prakriti, jiva bhuta. So there is a divine nature. Sri Krishna is not saying it is of the nature of the three gunas. There is his nature, para prakriti. And that nature also acts in the jiva. He has also said through the swabhava and the swadharma. But why we are not able to live according to that? Because there is the veil of lower nature, of ignorance. First we must break through the veil. And very easy to understand it. When, you know, sometimes children show such indications that they are deeply inclined in a certain direction, you know. But as they grow up, we have unfortunate adults, sorry, parents, teachers, who have ambitions, who have desires, who want him to become this and become that. And so the child forgets what God wants him to become. So I remember one place where one little girl, 9-year-old, she was asked, usual question everybody asks, what do you want to become when you grow up? And this girl says, I want to become God. What's wrong with her? What's wrong with her? She needs treatment. So you see, that's so true. Of course, that doesn't mean that you don't take up a job and other things. But see how ambition and desire completely distorts the original file. This is the Trojan horse. And it's literally the Trojan horse because it comes from the so-called loved ones. People who care for you, they put this Trojan horse inside, you know, quietly. No, 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 you must become this, you must do that. That's how you will get respect, prestige and whatnot. And I'm reminded of one of the real stories of Taradi. She was not interested in studying. Though it's a different thing altogether, that 75% almost of the questions in mother's conversations are asked by her. And her father would tell her, why are you behaving like a stupid girl? What do you mean? You are the only one asking questions. As if you don't know, I actually ask. And mother congratulated that she is receiving the questions correctly. Because even, you know, she wanted people to ask questions. And so at around 15, that she is not interested in studying. So mother asked her, what do you want to do? She said, I want to do photography. I said, all right. See, those days, it's such an advancement. Let her do photography. Why should she study? And see how the mother shaped. Now we all know the journey. So there is this swabhava and swadharma through which the para prakriti, divine shakti is pressing us. But in the lower nature, it gets mixed up with ego and desire and ambition. And the classical description, often people ask, is there something like that in Savitri? You see, when you read Triple Soul Forces, there is the high point of nature to which Savitri can climb before she breaks into her soul and into the infinity of God. There is a high point she climbs where she can identify, become one of those, Madonnas of light and give shed light or knowledge upon earth where she can, there is greatness of love. Even that is a vibhuti. Genius of love, of the heart. Someone whom we see like Sri Ramakrishna, genius of the heart. What kind of love he generates upon earth. So similarly, genius of will and organization. So she goes to that point where now she can stay there and become a vibhuti. But Savitri crosses that space and she goes further. But this is a stage which comes in the evolution of mankind. And this stage reminds us that basically what are we here for? We are here to grow into the Godhead, and that's where the importance of the avatar. The avatar takes a human body, becomes man, so that man can become God. This is his whole purpose. But well, mankind does something very smart. He doesn't want to become God. So he puts God in a temple, fasts, does puja. Today somebody asked a question that it is said that if I fast on Janmashtami, there will be the merit of so many yajna or punyas. I said, Sri Krishna never fasted. He never says this in the Gita. In fact, he says, observe moderation. He says that very clearly. And none of the gopis whom we know, they fasted. So suddenly this new thing comes, because it's easier to fast on Janmashtami. See, we are lazy people. It's easy. One day I will keep fast, and one day, it's good for health also, probably. I don't know. I'm not too sure about that. But thing is, but to become like him, this is tremendous. And that's the greatness of Arjun. Arjun is a vibhuti. He doesn't do any of these things, but he has qualified himself to reach that high point. So even this nature is being upgraded to become one with that super nature. So here we see a new thought which comes in the Gita, which is not the traditional Vedanta. So people try to, explain only on the... There is the consummation of the soul by recovering first its own self out of the ignorance, then the divine self within, which is together, then its universal self and the transcendent self. But there is also the consummation of nature. That's what in synthesis Sri Aurobindo says, liberation of soul and liberation of nature. So we see how directly Sri Aurobindo continues Sri Krishna's work. Of course, after the liberation of nature, there is the transformation of the instruments. That you don't see in the Gita. So this is the theory of the vibhuti. And we'll read this page 366. The message of the Gita is the gospel of the divinity in man, who, by force of an increasing union, unfolds himself out of the veil of the lower nature, reveals to the human soul his cosmic spirit, reveals his absolute transcendences, reveals himself in man and in all beings. So this is a great hope, because divine is concealed in all of us. He is going to unfold himself, but each in his own way. That's why there is Swabhava and Swadharma. So he is infinite, but in each one he unfolds in his own way. The potential outcome here of this union, this divine yoga, man growing towards the Godhead manifest in the human soul, and to the inner human vision, is our liberation from limited ego and our elevation to the higher nature of a divine humanity. So what is the ego given for? It's a schooling stage. So the seed is put inside a case, because it cannot straight away enter into the vastnesses of God. It can be very disorienting. While it may look very nice, but to be a vibhuti is not just a burden. The instrument can even break down. It can crack. There were four of these beings of the higher planes who wanted to manifest, who were necessary even for the supramental yoga transformation. And one of them was aspiration, second was faith, third was surrender, one more, to bring down immortality. And the person who embodied faith was basically Tirupati. Some of us may have heard and may not have heard about him. And Tirupati had a psychological breakdown. He had to be sent away, because The afflatus of God, when it acts in an individual, breaks the measure, shatters. That's why it is said that genius, you call in the Western context, we use the word genius. So the clay cannot always hold that energy. Yet nature tries to shoot herself. What she does in a genius, Ramanujam, is a genius. And that's why he was actually experiencing those formulas of mathematics. They used to descend, and when he was asked, how are you able to derive these formulas? He said, I don't know, they come to me. And see how he died very, relatively very young, 32, 33. And what a gift he gave within that short time. Because that's what is the problem of a genius, that it's bearing the burden of infinity. And so we have to understand that it's not like, oh, Vibhuti is a lucrative job offer, divine will give, pick up someone. No, it shatters the limits. So it has to be a process. And here he reveals the process, that why, Arjun, you are special to me. Vibhutis are those in whom the divine works in a very special way. He says that even in this chapter, that you are dear to me personally. So God is not just everybody is the same. At one level, yes. But there are some who have reached a point where there is a very special bond that he forms. That's what every time we see. So Arjun is one of them. The mother once spoke of three persons in the ashram, said, they are the only three people who have my unconditional protection. And they went through what kind of thing. One of them, the whole roof collapsed and somebody picked him up and put him against the, thrust him against the wall. He doesn't know how. He survived. One of them is still alive, so I won't take the name. The second one was Yvonne, Medhananda's wife. And it was told, mother once told, don't say anything to her, because if you say anything to her, which is harsh or this thing, it comes straight to me. What was the relation? We don't know. So there are some special ones which have reached a point for whatever reason. They may or may not be known to public eye. That's not important. So this is the growth of man towards the Godhead. This is the divine yoga. So this is not philosophy to start with. Gita is not philosophy and metaphysics. Though we can all derive our philosophical conclusions. But philosophy is always the second hand made of yoga. Yoga is the vision. So a few lines below. For dwelling in this greater spiritual nature and not in the mortal weft, the tangled complexity of the three gunas, man, one with God by knowledge, love and will, and the giving up of his whole being into the Godhead, is able indeed to rise to the absolute transcendence, but also to act upon the world no longer in ignorance. But, now this comes the second important thing, but in the right relation of the individual to the Supreme. In the truth of the spirit, fulfilled in immortality for God in the world and no longer for the ego. So we don't need to escape from the world. Why? Because God is here and working here. So we have to tune ourselves to the divine rather than snap cut the strings of life which have been woven through, or the weft of karmas, if you want to put it, which have been spun around the soul in its journey. We have to tune these strings to the divine. And that's what he is revealing to us. Right relation. Okay. So we come to page 367. So how does a liberated man look at God? It's very difficult to understand the actions of the liberated person, because he doesn't look at world the way. See, when the whole carnage takes place, Kurukshetra war, then when all these Pandavas and Shri Krishna, they go to meet Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. So what would be that moment, we can imagine. So Dhritarashtra is waiting. Let Bhima come, I'll embrace him and crush him, because he was very strong. So Shri Krishna has made an iron statue similar to him. And when Bhima goes to meet, he says, hold on. Puts the statue and he crushes it because he is so powerful. And Gandhari curses Krishna. He says, because of you, all my children died. And you are cursed. You will see the destruction of your own clan the way I have witnessed mine. Sri Krishna smiles and accepts because that was already part of the event. So in the larger, so he says, yeah, I know it had to happen. At least your anger is now transmitted to an event which was anyways going to happen. But see, how the actions of a liberated person can be totally misunderstood. So why? Because he sees differently. So here comes the liberated man's view, somewhere in the middle of the paragraph on page 367. The liberated man's view of the world around him, his attitude towards the cosmic manifestation of which he has now the central secret. What will be the attitude? So he will have first the knowledge of the unity of existence and the regarding eye of that knowledge. So he will have that unity which we see always, you know, when Ravana falls, what does Lord Rama say? He tells Lakshman, you know, just make sure, catch him before he dies. What do you mean? No, you learn from him the secrets of governance. What? He says, see, whatever it is, he went straight, but he looked after his people very well. So learn from him, because this is the moment. He would have never taught you. So when he goes to learn, he knows. He says, all right, but I won't give you this secret just like that. You have to be like a disciple. You can't come and command, my brother has, you know, killed you, you fellow. So he stands like a disciple and he gives the knowledge to him. So even in a man, see, there is the divine energy which got blocked or locked. He is one of those in whom the divine afflatus which was working broke his system. He got into an ego. So becoming an instrument of God, the line between being an instrument should become make you humble, because you know it is the divine which is working. But the line is so thin that the moment you cross it, it's me. Shubhendu says that in Synthesis of Yoga, that there is a danger that, you know, if you become an instrument of God, how the ego may take the better of you and break you down. So that's what happened in him. Otherwise, he was a person who was spreading the Vedas, Vedic knowledge. And he breaks down simply because he can't contain it. He thinks, I am the special one. And yet there is the divine energy inside which is frustrated. There is the line in Savitri, that passage, where he says that, you know, because the instrument has failed, the Godhead seed stays frustrates in the nature, something like that, in Vision and the Boon, that because the instrument has failed. But then he says, but how shall the end be vain when God is guide? So ultimately, so these are the adventure. That's how the mother says it's an adventure. Because when supernature acts on the human nature, which way it will go? Eventually the destiny is certain. But you know, all kinds of things are on the way. So first is he will have the knowledge of the unity of existence. So there is the divine in everyone. Even in the, as he says in one of his poems, The One Self, he says, all are deceived. They do what the one power dictates. And it ends very beautifully. My rival's downfall is my own disgrace. I look at my enemy and see Krishna's face. This is Sri Aurobindo. So there is, both things are true. In this game, they have come as enemies. Let's play enemy. But still, the divine is there inside. Look at that vision of the liberated person. So he cannot feel hatred or the sense of enmity. So this is the first thing. He will see all around him as souls and forms and powers of the one divine being. Few lines below. But he will also see that one is the inhabitant in all, their self, the essential spirit within them. So at one level he will see all of them are the powers and aspects of the divine. Even in somebody, let's say, sometimes if you watch, you can see some of these so-called villains, you know, extremely generous, or sometimes, you know, they can, even courage, it's a very crude manifestation of courage. But they don't want to hide away. They want to fight in the open. Duryodhana is one of them. He doesn't want to really run away from the battle. He says, no, I'll fight. I'll fight to the finish. So you see that even within him, there is this something which is pointing towards the Godhead. So, but he will also see the divine presence in them. without whose secret presence in their conscious nature they would not at all live, move or act, and without whose will, power, sanction or sufferance, not one of their movements at any moment would be in the least degree possible. So you'll see the divine acting in all of them and through them. All will be to him a becoming of his one universal being. So this raises a difficulty sometimes that, oh, why did God turn this fellow, formidable fellow, as my enemy? Still it is God. So that's why Sri Aurobindo always would remind of oneness. There is a very touching story of the mother. She recounts it in the agenda where Chinmay, we know, she was Dara's sister. I'm forgetting her name. Some Begum. So she used to get very hostile impulses to throw the mother, to push her, to the impulse to just, of course, to kill like that, throw her down. And mother knew it, and she had kept her because, you know, if she went out in the world, she would do much more damage. Much more damage will come to her. She had tied her near to her. And then only once the mother gave her a slap to free the whatever the devil inside her. And then she recounted this story when Sri Aurobindo, he said nothing. He just told me very gently, "You ought not have done that," mother recounts it. And then she says, why? Because he based his action on oneness. So while all this is okay, hostile forces are real, for sure. There are adverse forces. But even there, if you can see, that's why mother says, when adverse forces come, you laugh at the adversary. Go past him. Don't get caught into that game. Don't meditate on the hostile forces, otherwise you'll end up seeing everywhere in the world. See the divine. So that's what is the vision of those. And it can go to that extent. That's what we are just discussing. Page 368. No outward or bewildering appearance of things will in any smallest degree diminish or conflict with the completeness of this vision. This person has done so much harm to me. Always if anybody does harm to me, he cannot be divine. Only those who flatter me are God's children. He shatters all these things. Huh? Divine is in everyone and everything. This is one of those things, first things to learn. And there is something which, if he has come as an enemy, I must fulfill my role, but hold no enmity. I must yet do what I have to do. This should not blind me. Oh, he is supposed to be divine. Okay, I'll surrender. No. Surrender to the divine within. Play your role. Your role is today to confront and oppose, to stay the arms of the aggressor. If you look at Sri Aurobindo's revolutionary movement, this is something which goes missed. Read his entire writings. Sometimes the remarks are scathing. The irony is evident. For example, when he writes of the British judiciary system. But not one place you will see a kind of hate or something like that coming. People have a wrong idea. He never encouraged bomb this person. And in fact, he says that. Not one place. And that's why during the Second World War, he could say, well, the British here are on the right side. People didn't understand. Precisely because you have to play your part. That's exactly what we see in Sri Aurobindo's life. Okay, we'll come to, and then he says, insists that, you know, you have to know these things, not just ideatively, intellectually, but realize them in spiritual vision. So how to do it? That Sri Aurobindo has shown the way, that in Alipur jail, when he was walking, see how he took it as a grace. So when he was walking between the cow shed and the prisoner's work shop, so there was a, you know, within the prison that you can walk. So he was walking, constantly meditating on this mantra, Sarva Khalvidam Brahman. All this that is Brahman. And he says that he would look at the tree and he would conceive that there is divine here. It's, we know about the vision that took place. But how did it take place? He was constantly living with this idea. Oh, these trees, they are divine. These pillars are divine. The jailer is divine. The prisoners are divine. So one day, the power of the idea, it explodes itself. And then God rushes from every side. So this is the method that one has to live with this. It's not enough to intellectually conceive. Because it'll break down. If you try to practice it intellectually, it may even confuse. Like, you know, that story of Mahavat Brahman, which we have already spoken of. It'll confuse us that elephant is coming, he is God, I am God, nothing, God will do nothing to God. And the fellow is saying, move out of the way. He says, no, you don't know, I know a great truth, elephant and me are God. And elephant throws him. So he says, what kind of knowledge my guru gave? He says, yes, but you know, I also spoke through that other fellow who said that, you know, get out of the way. So why did you partially follow the knowledge? So you see, intellectually following it creates a problem. Intellectually all are God, let's meet together, have a party. That is not, it doesn't imply that. So in the becoming we have to understand that he will himself take us step by step. So we have to realize it with his spiritual vision. Then page 369, now we come to the nature, 369. The paragraph begins, but this spiritual consciousness of world existence will not see nature in the world as the normal mind of man sees it in the ignorance, or only as it is in the effects of the ignorance. So normal human nature sees as binaries. And as we know, the age of binary is actually over. So now you have to see in terms of unity, things moving from one end to another. That's how one can understand. Otherwise, unity is very difficult to understand. Unity is not uniformity. Things are moving from darkness towards light. But we normally make them static. This is good, this is bad. This is right, this is wrong. This is a binary way of seeing it. And world consciousness is now discarding it. So the spiritual consciousness doesn't see things as we ordinarily see. All in this nature that is of the ignorance, all that is imperfect or painful or perverse and repellent, does not exist as an absolute opposite of the nature of the Godhead. There can be never anything like that. It can be a distortion. But goes back to something behind itself, goes back to a saving power of spirit, in which it can find its own true being and redemption. There are very interesting stories like that. One of them is in the Ramayana, where perhaps Sita or Hanuman, forgetting. It's a very rare story where, you know, caught in a magic of cobweb of this spider web. It's totally confusing, you know, it's a giant spider web spun out by. But then who destroys the spider web? Mother Mahalakshmi comes. And she is the origin of all the webs. So she just demolishes it, just by that power. Because you refer it back ultimately. So here you see it happening like this. But it also owes its origin ultimately to some divine power, which has strayed or has entered into the lower nature and become what it has become. There is an original and originating supreme prakriti in which the divine power and will to be enjoys its own absolute quality and pure revelation. There is found the highest, there the perfect energy of all the energies we see in the universe. That is what presents itself to us as the ideal nature of the Godhead. So this is where, and that ideal gets distorted here. Like strength of the divine and strength of the brute are yet strength, and they owe this strength to one source. Knowledge or intelligence of the wise, and the knowledge and intelligence of the cunning who is cheating people, of a Charles Sobhraj, yet come from, and see, this is a classic example. There have been movies made on Charles Sobhraj. Some of us may not have heard. extremely cunning person who could deceive. But you know, people took fascination in his movie, how he could cheat. He had a way to get around things. And Sri Krishna says, I am the intelligence of the cunning. But it is distorted here. The same truth, the same cunning of Krishna gets distorted in the cunning of Shakuni. And Shakuni knows it. And that's why he keeps saying that you did one mistake, Duryodhan, for which you'll repent all your life. You didn't choose Krishna. He's the only fellow who knows. See, these stories are so beautifully symbolic. The same cunning. But there is a difference between. So all power goes back to the ideal nature of the Godhead, which is the nature of absolute knowledge, absolute power and will, absolute love and delight. So all, for example, we see love here. It's distorted. But is love itself distorted? No. Love goes back to the divine love. And if we can connect to that, then only we can express it. So everything becomes so simple. But in human consciousness, it gets distorted. In the asura, it gets perverted. So this is the only difference. As the mother puts it, there is only one love. If you have the consciousness of an animal, you will love like an animal. If you have the consciousness of an asura, you will love like an asura. You have the consciousness of a god, you will love like a god. And if your consciousness is like a human, you love like a human. See, it's so simple. And if your consciousness is divine, you love like the divine. So that's why in divine, when he loves, he has no need of possession because he already possesses all things. He knows that possession has nothing to do with something physical. That's why the Isha Upanishad says, Tene tak tene bhunjita magradha kasya siddhanam. Why you want to possess anything? Magrida kasya siddhanam. By renouncing, you can have delight. Because that is the nature of the Godhead at its highest. See how Sri Aurobindo had recognized the mother as the divine mother. It's not that he had not known. He knew at first sight, Mira is born free. And perfect surrender. All this he knew. And the mother, she says, I was waiting for him to just say once, stay. I would have stayed back. Look at the beauty of their surrender. She doesn't stay because Sri Aurobindo doesn't say stay. She knows. He knows. But if he doesn't say stay, that's called surrender. And then you see the prayers soon after departure on 22nd February 1915. Solitude, a harsh solitude. She goes through all that. So this is the way that divine beings look at creation, a deeper purpose. Because she had to try converting the asura through those means, her husband, and then before she could come. So all that is part of the Leela. All is there in the divine. Each energy, each quality is in the ideal divine nature, pure, perfect, well-possessed, harmonious in its action. Nothing there strives for its own separate, limited self-fulfillment. All act in an inexpressible oneness. They're all dharmas, all laws of being. Dharma, law of being, is only characteristic action of the divine energy and quality. Guna karma are one free and plastic dharma. Then, next paragraph. But in the universe in which we live, there is a separating principle of selection and differentiation. So that's where the ego comes in. This is what is described in the Triple Soul Forces, if you really look at it. That the dharma of knowledge, love, climbing to its highest. But then in the human consciousness, distorted, limited. In the ego, you see the echo. That's why he uses the word echo. Echo meaning thereby, this is not the origin. See how beautifully he says, and the warped echo heard. Why this is the echo? Because origin is there. How Sri Aurobindo weaves the word so beautifully. Origin is there. So he first describes knowledge, power of knowledge, power of love, power of service, power of courage, strength, in its original divine splendor. Where, you know, Durga says that, I care not for virtue or for sin. I care not for the opposition of the gods and the frown of hell. Nothing. I do the deed he has put into my heart. That's it. Durga does according to that divine impulse. But in the human consciousness, I'll slay my enemies. I'll So he uses the word ego. So ego is always a little distortion, little it becomes diminished, faint. This one of the marvelous words Sri Aurobindo has used in the Triple Soul Forces. It's an ego, not the origin. But we take it, oh, this person is like this. No. He can, if he were to follow the trail, go. And that's why, you see, Savitri completely ignores this fellow. Nowhere she gets into an argument. She hears the Vaptiko, then she addresses, because that is the original truth. And that also Sri Aurobindo reveals to us. So we see, page 371, all energies and qualities are powers of the Godhead. Each comes from the divine Prakriti there, works for its self-expression in the lower Prakriti here, increases its potency of affirmation and actualized values under these hampering conditions. So even why there are hampering conditions? Because they increase the potency. When you are challenged, when you are opposed, then what happens? That's the play. So it grows in its potency. Every time we think that we know and a new truth is discovered which completely contradicts. So it's a time to expand. You believe you are very mighty and you know there is somebody who stays your hand. Then you have a chance of progress. That's why Sri Aurobindo says, if you win in an argument against an opponent, that means you have lost it. You lost the chance of progress. So that's what is the basis. As it reaches its heights of self-power, comes near to the visible expression of the divinity and directs itself upward to its own absolute in the supreme. So this is the journey. It starts under hampered condition, all these powers of knowledge, strength, will, whatever we may say, and love. But as it climbs upward, through struggle, through opposition, it starts reaching towards its own source. The ideal, the divine nature, for each energy is being in power of the Godhead, and the expansion and self-expression of energy is always the expansion and expression of the Godhead. Now we understand God's play. He does not just cut things. No, you go there. No, you don't do this. No, he doesn't say that. He just allows the soul to grow and it to change. That's what the whole yoga is about. Because what is here in this vessel today will tomorrow become this. If you tie it up fully, then you have lost the capacity equally to grow. One might even say that at a certain point of intensity, each force in us, force of knowledge, force of will, force of love, force of delight, can result in an explosion which breaks the shell of the lower formulation and liberates the energy from its imperative, separative action into union with the infinite freedom and power of the divine being. This actually happens. One of the classic examples is Rishi Durvasa. His name is Suvasa to begin with. Yes, his name is, original name is Suvasa. And he says, nobody understands me. So because everybody, oh, Durvasa is coming, stay away, stay away. But he had done that kind of tapasya where even the slightest untruth he couldn't take it and he would curse. So he was called a Durvasa. But his original name was not Durvasa. He is one of the celestial sages, child of Brahma. But because the intensity of the energy breaks the mold. And he says that here, what we were speaking about. A highest Godward tension liberates the mind through an absolute seeing of knowledge, liberates the heart through an absolute love and delight, liberates the whole existence through an absolute concentration of will towards a greater existence. Now see the words, but the percussion and the delivering shock come by the touch of the divine on our actual nature, which directs the energy away from its normal limited separative action and objects towards the eternal, universal and transcendent. Percussion, shock. And then suddenly it liberates. And see, some of the people may have seen how Champak Lalji, if somebody has ever seen him, when he would burst, oh my God. And Sri Aurobindo says, it is midsummer now and heat meets heat. And he had a tiff with someone. But people know he went once to a place where there were Shubhendu's relics and all the gods and goddesses' pictures were there. Guess what Champaklalji did? Picked up the photographs, threw them all. One by one. All the gods and goddesses out. Tell him, sir, no, they are gods and goddesses, respectable. That's his way. When it goes beyond a point, who will say you are right or wrong? He is moved by the divine expression in a particular way. Nalinda will act very differently. He will probably just stay indifferent and walk out as if nothing has happened. That's how they say. See, that's the beauty of creation. It's one same infinite energy but will express differently. When Nalinda and Amrita, good friends, side by side their rooms, and they would walk out, one a being of wisdom, another of love, and then they would go like real friends together to dining room, back, and see the difference. Nalinda would walk absolutely not looking left, right, nobody, not a smile on the face. Amrita, hi, hello, all okay, good. Everybody, who is greater, who is lesser, is the manifestation of the same. That's why Nalinda once said this to someone when they asked him. He was asked something like, who is greater, Champaklalji or you? He said, who is greater? Aren't we the same? That is the truth. But in expression, manifestation. So in each one, that mold is. So this is where he... So what about the lower nature? This next paragraph, the infinite divine Shakti is present everywhere and secretly supports the lower formulation. If it were not supporting, it will collapse. So it is there, even behind what we call as evil. Hidden in the heart of each creature, but it holds itself back until the veil of Yogmaya is rent by the light of knowledge. So it waits. It holds itself back. It is the same divine holding itself back. The spiritual being of man, the jiva, possesses the divine nature. And that's what we have read earlier. Swabhava and Sudharma. He is a manifestation of God in that nature. Prahara, Prakriti, Jiva, Bhuta. And that's why Shurbindu insists on the psychic being. Because then we touch the Swabhava and the Sudharma and the journey is safe. If without it the divine energy acts on the mind or on the heart, it'll explode. I know somebody who started feeling all love. People thought he has gone mad because he was meeting and embracing everybody on the road. He was embracing the tree, embracing the wall. And they got him to me and I asked him, whatever. He said, I'm feeling abundant love. Everywhere I'm feeling the mother. I said, yes, I understand fully. But don't do it. They will put you inside. They won't understand. So you better, keep that. Pray to the mother that she holds back. But he was actually feeling. He was really having a wonderful experience of the explosion of the heart. I said, I understand you. But you must know that we are not ready. I said, you embrace the tree, but don't embrace, everybody on the road. You will be labeled. Yes, you have to learn to contain that energy because, that's the difficulty because it'll shatter all the measure. That's one of the problems that even we see in Savitri when the Divine Mother says to Ashupati, it will shatter all the human measures. Truth born too soon might break the imperfect earth. That's why the psychic being, because that's where the para prakriti directly touches the jiva. So through that door, everything is safe. So it speaks about, how these things gets distorted, dominated by the guna of tamas, few lines below, page 372. The mode of darkness in inertia, the power of being works in a weak confusion. Dominated by the guna of rajas, the mode of action, desire and possession, there is a struggle, there is an effort. Dominated by the guna of sattva, the mode of light and poise and peace, there is a more harmonious action, a right dealing with the nature, but right only within the limits of an individual light and a capacity unable to exceed the better forms of this lower mental will and knowledge. So that's why this what we read, triple soul forces, sattva, rajas, tamas, or to go the other way, tamo, rajo, sattva, they are soul forces. But in the lower nature, they become what they become. And they are dominated by the three gunas. So these things, the liberated vision sees three things at once. So it sees the divine within, and it sees the difference of apparent action in the deva and the asura. It doesn't say, okay, divine is all. It also sees the nature. So its action is not confused or bewildered. So first is, it sees the divine within, and it sees the, secondly, the difference of the apparent action in deva and asura. And last four lines on 373, the liberated eye does not lay undue stress on the perversion and imperfection, but it is able to see all with a complete love and charity in the heart, a complete understanding in the intelligence, a complete equality in the spirit. That's why the mother would entertain all kinds of people. She was not seeing the apparent imperfection, but she was seeing the divine possibility, which is always there. And that's why we see the mother would never send anyone away, Mother and Aurobindo. It is so many instances. It is only when people themselves decided to go away. And she says some of the instances are very interesting. She says, Kali started dancing over his head and he was compelled to go away. Then she says, thank God. It's a big... She would not send. Because they are simultaneous. Unless staying here becomes difficult for the person. Otherwise they would not send. Because they are seeing that this is a distortion, but the real thing is something else. And that's the beauty of the divine action. Finally, it sees the apparent upward urge of the striving powers of the will to be. So he sees not our defects, but the upward aspiration. That's why Mother says, I always look upward towards the light, towards peace, where she is lifting up the soul. And it says, if the divine were to one moment even look at creation as human beings see, there would be no hope for anyone. Very clear. And it's so true. How much ever opinionated we may be about ourselves. So she says, it respects, welcomes, encourages all high manifestations of energy and quality, the flaming tongues of the divinity. The eye of the spirit, last line on this, the eye of the spirit sees and marks out the rising godhead of man in the great vibhuti. That's why Tulsidas, in one of his passages in Ramayana, he says, Hindi first, Ram Suswami Kusevak Moso, Dekhi Kripa Niji Tehi Vidiposo. He says that master like you and a Kusevak means a bad servant like me, if you look at me, if I look at myself, there will be no hope. But if I look at your grace, there is always hope. So that's the, because why? Because the divine sees the other. So there is hope for everybody. All these idea, unfitness, not good, this is in the becoming, making. We are all products in the making. Okay, so that's how, so... And he says that this is a truth which all ancient cultures recognized and respected. But one side of the modern mind has singular repugnance to the idea, sees in it a worship of mere strength and power, an ignorant or self-degrading hero worship, or a doctrine of the Asuric Superman. And of course the egoism may come, but this is something we have lost. So when you read the Homer's Iliad, see both sides, when you read Hector's story, Achilles, and then you see the magnificence of mood and the deep arch of the Godhead inside, it's amazing. I mean, look at Achilles. If you look at it from modern point of view, you'll say he's a killing machine. And he says, why he's not fighting? Because his girlfriend has been taken away by Agamemnon. I'm not going to fight, just imagine. What a silly reason. But when he enters into the battle, nobody is able to stand before him. Now this is something which the ancient cultures respected. Exuberance of the divine energy inside. Odysseus, the clever, the wise. But this is something, because all is same, all is equal. one man, one vote, which is okay. I mean, not age of democracy. So page 375. The Gita puts it in that right place. What truth? That the truth of the greatness. Right place and perspective. It must be based on the recognition of the divine self in all men and all creatures. It must be consistent with an equal heart to the great and the small, the eminent and the obscure manifestation. God must be seen and loved in the ignorant, the humble, the weak, the vile, the outcast. In the Vibhuti himself, it is not, except as a symbol, the outward individual that is to be thus recognized and set high, but the one Godhead who displays himself in the power. In India, this was there for a long, long time. That was the basis of, you know, a person who was truly a carrier of knowledge. He was respected. The Brahmin, for instance, that he, you know, he was carrying knowledge. So he was to be respected wherever he went. Because of, you know, here is a man who is striving. Not that he, but it is the divine energy which has led him to this point. And then very sweet lines, page 375, last passage. In one place, the teacher, speaking as the supreme and equal self of all, declares that there is none dear to him, none hated. But in others, he says that Arjun is dear to him and is bhakta, and therefore guided and safe in his hands, chosen for the vision and the knowledge. There is here only an apparent inconsistency. The power as the self of the cosmos is equal to all. Therefore, to each being he gives according to the workings of his nature. But there is also a personal relation of the Purushottama to the human being, in which he is specially near to the man who has come near to him. See, what a lovely thing it is. And that's why Arjun is so favored, if you look at it. I mean, he is saved. We have read that story that his chariot would have been destroyed long back. And Sri Krishna saves him at every critical point because he is the one who has been chosen. That's why probably many are called, few are chosen. The chosen are the one who become vessels and vehicles of the divine. All these heroes and men of might who have joined in battle on the plain of Kurukshetra are vessels of the divine will, knowingly, unknowingly. All of them. They can do nothing except what the divine will has decided. Yet. And through each he works according to his nature. But behind the veil of his ego. He is pushing Duryodhana. See, he became such a nice instrument. He called all the warring people together. So that all these warring instincts can be swallowed. Meted out in the battle of Kurukshetra. After that the warrior is gone. Whoever was left, the Yadukul, they are also gone. Now Kaliyug will start. All this strong Kshatriya instinct, now the Vaishya and the Shudra must have their play. The business, the industrial tycoon, and then the man who works right on the ground level, they must have their play. So what Krishna does, he takes back all the Kshatriya energies and Duryodhana becomes an instrument. It would not have been possible. So even in the opponent, the divine will is working. But not the way we understand. Arjun has reached that point when the veil can be rent and the embodied Godhead can reveal the mystery of his workings to his Vibhuti. It is even essential that there should be a revelation. Okay, we come to the last passage. So after the Vibhuti, what is Arjuna called upon after the battle and everything? He is called to self-knowledge. He must see God as the master of the universe and the origin of the world's creatures and happenings, all as the Godhead self-expression in nature. God in all, God in himself, as man and as Vibhuti, God in the lownesses of being and on its heights, God on the topmost summits, man to upon heights as the Vibhuti, and climbing to the last summits to the supreme liberation and union. He has been promised Arjun, look here. This is basically the last war. That's why he says, after this, you know what? Sarva dharman parityaja mamekam sharanam raja aham tva sarva papebhyo mokshishyami masucha. He has told him that this is, yeah, I have selected you for this all through. So you fight this battle as the vibhuti, and after this, closure. That, see, like Hanuman, he is called to the war in Dwapar. So he said, no, my task is over in, because had he come, nobody would have been able to stand. So he said, no, this is not the age where I am supposed to come. I have done what I had to do. This is your war. You people have to evolve. He doesn't say in so many words. It's your war. You have to face it. But I'll be there. I'll sit on the flag and watch. I'll do my little bit. Shobindo says that when he was asked by Nagin Doshi, in this life you are an avatar, but what were you in other lives? He says, we were there as vibhutis. We know some of the famous ones. Mothers, Catherine the Great in Russia. Shobindo had Da Vinci, Augustus Caesar. So then Nagin Doshi asks, what were you doing as vibhutis? So they say, Shobindo says, carrying on the evolution. So he asks, what does that mean? He says, to explain, I have to write the whole spiritual history of the world. You see, all the critical junctures, Mother and Shobindo are there. Man too, upon heights is the vibhuti. Last summits in the supreme liberation and union. Time in its creation and destruction must be seen by him as the figure of the Godhead in its steps. Steps that accomplish the cycles of the cosmos on whose spires of movement the divine spirit in the human body rises, doing God's work in the world as his vibhuti to the supreme transcendences. So now he is ready. For what? For entire flooding by God. So after the vibhuti comes, what, that great destroyer, the divine is time the destroyer. So this is where we'll stop and meet on the 27th, I think so. 27th, yeah. Chema.